Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today, it's gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning, Mindy.
866-999-4626 is our number for your gardening questions this morning. That's 866-999-4626. Or shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Weather's been kind of on the dry side, Roberta. It's going to be warm. But, you know, that we got that heat emergency for other parts of the state, but only going to be, you know, around 80 here, which means we're going to probably have lots of visitors trying to escape that heat, right?
We are going to be the best place to be in Massachusetts for the next several days.
Exactly. So what does this mean for the gardens? So a little bit dry?
Yes, particularly those gardens that are newly planted, like vegetable gardens and annual beds, newly planted perennials. All the established plants are fine, at least in my yard. They've been in the ground for a long time. But anything that went in this year or sometimes even last year probably don't have a really well-developed root system to sustain them during hot, dry periods. I actually went out at 6:30 this morning and put on the sprinkler in my vegetable garden, so it should be fine for the next several days. But keep an eye on all that newly planted material.
Right, and you get probably your containers. I know I water my containers
definitely.
Every day. Yeah.
Yep, definitely containers. I got home from work last night, and I had put in some beautiful variegated New Guinea impatiens several days ago, watered them well. They're in mostly shade, but they get the afternoon sun, and when I got home last night, they hadn't been watered for several days. They were totally wilted, so immediately put the water on them. And the beauty of New Guineas is they have an amazing ability to spring back.
Yep,
I got to keep an eye on them.
All right, let's talk about some of the insects and things that we're seeing. We've got a new insect on the Cape, and this is the boxwood tree moth. Tell us about that.
Yes, I did want to mention this because it's all important for those people who actually have boxwood to start paying attention to them. This is a newly introduced pest for Massachusetts. It was found last year in Sandwich. It's also been found in Barnstable, and there are reports of it being found in Falmouth. It's not found in the rest of Massachusetts yet, so we're sort of ground zero for this pest. It will kill boxwoods. It comes in and lays its eggs. It overwinters as a caterpillar, so it starts feeding fairly early in the spring, pupates, emerges as the adult moth, which is actually kind of a pretty moth. Most of them are sort of white with gray edging along the wing, although there are some that come out all gray. What the caterpillar does is it starts feeding on the foliage and the stems, and it webs it together. Mm. So it's sort of like a webworm, and it can do considerable damage in high numbers. They've just recently pupated. I saw pictures that were posted on a Cape Cod Gardening page of the pupa. There are two generations a year, so when the moths come out of the pupa, there will be a second generation of eggs, second generation of caterpillars, and that's the stage they'll overwinter in. So people should be looking at their boxwoods. If they're seeing branches sort of webbed together and a lot of brown foliage, that's probably what you have. And it is important to take care of it. If you could cut the damaged portion out and bag it, you don't want to just toss it in the compost. They'll be happy there as well for the short period of time. Or use something like Captain Jack's, which should take care of it. The problem is when that webbing is very thick, they sort of web the stems together, they're inside that webbing area, and it's difficult to get the material in there that will control them. My suggestion for those of you who love boxwood is perhaps think of replacing them, because this pest is not going away anytime soon. And the Japanese holly, Ilex cremata.
Oh, love those.
Yes, it has a number of cultivars. It's actually, the common name is the boxleaf holly. But it has a number of cultivars that stay small, can be pruned like a boxwood. I mean, people love box in a formal garden. And it is a wonderful plant, but it does have, even besides the box tree moth, it has a number of other pests. So I would suggest perhaps thinking about replacing them over time.
Yeah. It's funny. I have a Japanese holly, and I didn't realize that they can get quite large if you don't trim them.
Some of them can. Some of them will stay small, but they're very amenable to pruning. So they're definitely a good plant to use as a substitute for a boxwood.
All right. Another thing, aphids. Oh, my goodness. The aphids this year are unbelievable. All of my lilies, or most of them anyway, have been covered in. So, I have never got Captain Jack's before. I got it this year because the aphids are so crazy. And, of course, it's spinosad. And you got to be careful. You don't want to spray it in the middle of the day when the bees are out. You got to follow directions. But
correct.
The aphids are nuts.
There are lots of aphids. They seem particularly to be happy on my peppers this year.
Oh, no.
So I have used, I actually used something called Neem Max. It's a, I think, a better formulation of neem for management. And it seemed to take care of them. I've also used it on my houseplants for mealybug, which is like the bane of my existence with houseplants. But you could use Cap'n Jack's. You could use Neem Max. Or you could wait and see if the ladybugs show up.
Oh, that would be great. Jenny's just saying they're worse when the nights are cool, which should end soon. So let's hope.
We hope. Although I like cool nights.
I like the cool nights too, but evidently so do the aphids.
Yes.
And the other thing, of course, and this is every year, those little earwigs.
Earwigs are actually considered... perhaps not by me, but by many people, earwigs are actually considered a beneficial insect.
Really?
Because they are part of that vast world of decomposers.
Oh.
We would be, buried in organic matter if we didn't have a lot of decomposers working for us. The problem is in spring when they lay their eggs and you have literally hundreds of babies present, there isn't a lot of decomposing organic matter in our garden at that time because we're putting fresh, tender little plants out there, which they're very happy to eat. So zinnias, my zinnias often get skeletonized. Other annuals, my pepper plants, I've seen squash being damaged by it in my garden. I use diatomaceous earth. It works very well, but you do have to reapply it with some regularity, particularly after, we haven't had a lot of rain, but after you irrigate or it rains.
And this is not the pool diatomaceous earth.
No,
this
it is not
the garden.
Pool
Yeah.
We wish, because that's less expensive, quite frankly. It's a horticultural grade diatomaceous earth. Sluggo Plus apparently is also very good for earwigs, so that would be something to look at the garden center, wherever you get your materials for your garden, and check that out. And it may be less expensive than diatomaceous earth. That's something I haven't compared the prices on that, but it's definitely worth looking at.
Yeah, for sure. Have you seen much about birch beetles?
Not this year. Their birch get a number of pests. The best birch to grow, quite frankly, is the heritage river birch, which seems to have fewer pests. There is a birch borer, bronze birch borer, that gets into most of the white-barked birch trees, eventually leading to their decline and death. So if you want a birch in your yard, the heritage is probably the best one. The Jack Monte birch is also a good one. It's whiter than the heritage birch, but it is not 100% resistant to the borer.
Yeah, they're such beautiful trees,
Oh, they are. They're gorgeous. Yeah. And very, sort of synonymous with New England, not necessarily Cape Cod, but white birches in New England, are a beautiful thing.
Right. Jennifer in Eastham says, I have 3 packets of tomato seeds, but it's June 18th. Is it too late to plant these?
From seed, I'm going to say it's it's probably too late. If it's going to take 7 to 10 days to germinate, you could try it. It's always worth a try. I hate to discourage people from trying these things, but don't expect to get any tomatoes. Maybe September.
Yeah, and we could have a nice fall. Who knows?
We usually do.
Yeah, so that could be a thing. The other thing that is decimating everything, money, of course, those rabbits. But, you know, I think I've said this. I chase the rabbits out. They see me coming. They run to the fence, except I was out in the yard weeding and I look over and there's this cutest little baby bunny. You know, it was just so cute. I didn't have the heart to chase it away. I just said, ah, 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 as it was chewing on my lily. And I'm like, ah, ah. And so it hopped away and went and chewed on something else. So I'm sure a lot of what I'm seeing, it's a hungry little guy, but he's so darn cute. I just don't have the heart to chase him out. And, you know,
they are a real pest. In my vegetable garden, I have I have 7 raised beds, and in the beds where I have plants that the bunnies really love, I have those beds fenced off with. Mm-hmm. It's just 24 inches of fencing all the way around the bed. But what I'm really surprised by pleasantly this year, for the past 3 or 4 years, every year I have overseeded my lawn with clover.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm finding now, the clover has come in beautifully. It's mixed in with the grass. It's like a 1950s lawn.
Yeah.
You know, we always had beautiful clover in lawns back then. I kind of went barefoot and got bee stung on my toes often. But the rabbits are actually in the clover.
Yeah.
And they're eating clover in the lawn, not my annuals. I planted a whole bunch of zinnias. They're all doing well. The
wow.
rabbits haven't eaten them.
Yeah.
They haven't eaten my dahlias. So I think early in the season, because clover goes dormant over the winter and it's not up early in the season,
mm-hmm.
that's when I have to protect things like hosta and lilies.
Right.
But I'm finding right now, and hopefully I'm not wrong, but my observation is they're preferring the clover.
Yeah, you know, and that's always been the case. I think last year was the first year where they really were chewing on the hosta, but they've always just stayed in the clover, so I haven't bothered with them. But if I see them in the clover, I don't run after them. But as soon as they get near the garden, I'm like, go on, get out of here, go find something else. But that baby is not in the clover. That baby wants the garden, I know. And it's going to get bigger, and then I'm going to chase it.
There you go. They are cute.
They are. They're so cute. They look at you. They just look up, and it's like, oh, I know. Anyway, we got an email from North Falmouth that says, I started growing grass from hydro seeding about 2 weeks ago. I know this isn't a good time to start growing grass, but we didn't have a choice because of road construction that tore up a big section of our lawn. We don't have automatic sprinklers, so I've been dragging hoses around the yard. The seeds have sprouted at this point, and the shaded areas are doing better than the sunny spots. She's got a few questions. Should I keep the soil moist at all times, even if I have to water twice a day, or should I let the soil dry slightly between waterings? Is there a time of day to avoid watering, and when can I stop watering?
Well, you have to consider the seed has germinated, but those little tiny grass seedlings have a very limited root system, and they haven't penetrated very deeply into the soil yet. So that top couple of inches of soil is affected more by the sun and by the temperature and will dry out. And if that's where the roots are, that's where your grass seedling needs to have available water. It sounds like the shaded area, you could probably reduce the amount of water, but out in the area where it's full sun, you would probably still need to water that at least once a day. I generally prefer to water early in the morning. I would say over the next couple of days while we're escaping the heat off Cape, it's still going to be in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
You would want to pay attention and maybe go out there, and if that top area of the soil is drying out, give it an additional amount of water.
Mm-hmm. And how long does she have to do that? When can she stop the watering?
She can reduce it. You can't stop it because mm-hmm. it's summer,
right.
You know, but you can reduce it to, you know, once your grass is up several inches and is starting to look like it's ready to be mown, you can probably reduce it to every few days. And then after a couple more weeks, you can reduce it based on rainfall to a good deep soaking once or twice a week.
Right. Talk to Eric, who's giving us a call from Sandwich. Hi, Eric.
Yes. Hi, Mindy. Good morning, Roberta.
So good morning.
Good morning. First, I must say, I was at a garden center recently, and I overheard a customer talking to someone working there, and I felt like I was on The Point, the garden show with Roberta Clark. And then last week, I was at a bar in Sandwich, and I heard the unmistakable voice of Mindy, and I thought, WCAI is everywhere.
Of course, you're at the garden center, and I'm in the bar, Roberta.
You both seem to be in your element.
Well, thank you.
I have two questions. The first one concerns fertilizing recently potted flowers. I usually use Osmocote mm-hmm. as a slow-acting fertilizer, but I heard recently that I should hold off on using any kind of liquid fertilizer for several weeks until the plants get acclimated.
I use fresh garden soil in my pots, not garden soil, but potting soil in my pots every year. And I do incorporate Osmocote into my containers. And I do water them well and let them get established for maybe a couple of weeks. Generally, I don't add additional fertilizer, either granular or liquid, until about sometime in early July, and then I'll do it again in August. So I fertilize my containers about once a month, in addition to the Osmocote in the soil. And they seem to respond to that.
Okay, great. My second question is concerning potting soil. I feel like I've probably spent $100 on potting soil alone this year.
It's very expensive, isn't mm-hmm. it?
It is.
I noticed that this year.
My mother used to buy a bag of topsoil, a bag of dehydrated cow manure, and a package of loam, sphagnum moss.
Mm-hmm.
And she would make her own potting soil, and she always had beautiful flowers. So I'm just wondering, is this a convenience thing, or is there something in, you know, it seems like products from the coast of Maine are everywhere now. Is there some secret element to that is important, or are we just everyone just kind of getting a little lazy about mm-hmm. making their own potting soil?
I think a lot of it is convenience. I know I have tons of house plants, mostly tropicals, philodendrons and epipremums and things like that, and they want an especially well-drained soil. So I make my own using potting soil, orchid bark, perlite, and things like that. And you know what? It's a pain in the neck, and it's messy. And Coastal Maine just came out with a tropical houseplant mix. Guess what I'm going to be using?
Exactly.
So that's the way I feel about. Yeah, I have a lot of containers, so I buy multiple bags.
Yeah.
Okay, and you don't use your potting soil over again. It seems like my plants use very little of the soil that I put in, particularly larger pots.
You know, sometimes I'll use the same soil 2 years in a row, or I'll just kind of put some new soil towards the top, you know, mix it in on the top.
Yeah.
Yeah, what I did this year with my large pots, particularly the ones I grow tomatoes in, I've actually got some dahlias in them this year, I haven't literally changed the soil by dumping it out in a couple of years, but what I do is this year I added bumper crop, to the top, filled the pot because the soil had sunk down a fair amount. So I added bumper crop, Osmocote, and totally mixed it well with my small perennial shovel. And that's what I'm using, and the plants look great. For smaller containers, for I have a number of geraniums I pot up and lots of other I can't resist buying plants. I generally use fresh soil in the smaller pots, but in the bigger pots, I just try to renew it on an annual basis and save myself some money.
Exactly. Eric, thank you. Thanks for the call.
Great. Thank you both.
You bet. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll talk more after a break. You're listening to The Point. It's Gardening This Morning with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Rick is giving us a call from Eastham. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning. I was calling to see if you have any good recommendations for getting rid of slugs. I grow potatoes in these potato bags, and I was they were invaded by slugs a couple of weeks ago, and I basically just go out at night with a flashlight and pick them off one by one and put them in soapy water to drown them. So
yeah,
that seems to work for a while, but then they come back. I'm not sure if they're hatching in the dirt or they're slugging their way up the potato bag into my plants. But,
yeah. Slugs are a problem.
Could be both.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Slugs are a real problem, and they're kind of gross, but basically they're a snail without a shell, and they can do a fair amount of damage on plants. They like it when it's moist, and of course the bags you're watering, because they dry out faster than in the ground. You could use something like Sluggo, Sluggo Plus, or you could try trapping them in containers sunk in the ground around your pots. Some people have used beer. I actually saw a comparison of different brands of beer and how they caught slugs. I can't remember which one it was. One of the Busch beers seemed to get more slugs than another beer. You could also, instead of using your beer to trap them, I have also seen people use potato peels and soak them in a little bit of water, and use the water in these, you know, just cans you sink in the ground, and that will also attract the slugs. And it's a lot easier than going out at night and trying to hand pick them.
Yeah. All right. Rick, thanks for the phone call. Hope that works for you. Peter is giving us a call from Plymouth. Hi, Peter. Peter, are you there? Oh, hi. Hi.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
Hi. I'm calling about lawn disease.
Okay.
Okay.
My whole area where I live, we get it all at once. I'm trying my best to control it. But I'd like to know what you recommend. I think the main offender is brown patch.
Yeah, brown patch is a tough one. I had red thread this spring, and that's a cool season.
I have that, too.
Yeah, I had a lot of red thread. It's a cool season disease. It usually starts to go away as it warms up. It's also a disease of low fertility. So I fertilized that area of the lawn. It's on the side yard that I frankly don't care that much about. But I did fertilize it, and it has cleared up. Brown patch doesn't respond as well. Lawn fungicides have changed so much over the years. I'm not totally up to date on what fungicides are available. So if you have a really good garden center with educated staff in your area, you might go and talk to them about what their products are and what in particular is good for brown patch. It's one of the more difficult ones to control without using a fungicide on a lawn, and it likes warm weather. So that's something to consider. It also likes a lot of moisture. So if you're irrigating frequently, you might want to change the timing of your irrigation, space it out maybe 2 to 3 times a week, putting down a half an inch at a time.
Okay.
Well, my whole area gets it. I know with brown patch, it loves to feed on fertilizer and watering during the daytime. What I do is I have a four system. I got over 15,000 square feet of lawn, and I got 4 zones. And if I don't get any rain, what I'll do is I'll put it on overnight until the morning. That's about 1.5 inches rain, and then I don't do anything until it rains or a week goes by.
Yeah, it really does like
control,
moisture.
But I'm just saying.
Yeah. What time do you put it on at night? Because generally watering late in the day or overnight leaves the lawn wet. It's
right,
better
well,
to do it first thing like 6 o'clock in the morning. So when the sun comes up,
yeah,
you've finished watering and it dries off the grass.
Yeah, Penny.
By the time it stops, it's about 6 o'clock in the 6 o'clock in the and the. You know, the sun's coming out and it dries up.
Okay. How long has it been on?
Overnight. I think he says puts it on at 11 to like 6. That's a lot of...
That's a long time.
Well, one zone. I got a rain gauge, and each zone's about 1.5 inches for 6
that's
hours.
That's a lot of moisture. I'd cut back on that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That could be part of the problem. That's too much water.
Too much water. Yeah, Peter, give that a try. Thanks for the call. Let's move on to Leslie, who's calling from Dartmouth. Hi, Leslie.
Hi, how are you?
Great.
That's good. I have a question about nut sedge. I just had someone plant me a beautiful lavender garden that's got 40 plants, and it's mulched with gravel, and it's got a beautiful cobblestone edging. And, you know, the lavender plants look beautiful. It's Hidcote Blue, and the hybrid is phenomenal. But all this little teeny baby, what I think is nutsedge, is coming up. I'm pulling it, and I see a little hard, very hard nut within the root, and it's, you know, little, looks like grass. So then I read you're not supposed to pull it. How am I going to handle this sedge?
Well, I have only one of my beds has a nut sedge problem, and I do pull it because I have so many plants in there. I don't want to use any sort of a weed killer because it's going to affect more than just the nut sedge. Nut sedge is very difficult to manage with weed killers as well. I think if you get on it early and often and keep pulling it, and again, you don't want to toss it in the compost with those little nuts because that's the propagating unit of the plant. So bag it up and discard it. I'm a firm believer that if you keep on it with hand pulling, it will be okay. Generally, you do want to get as much of it as possible. Make sure you get that little nut if you can. Generally, they're just starting to form their nuts at this point, and it sort of climaxes in August. But if you get it while they're small, you should at least minimize the problem.
Great.
Okay. I also read that they are connected with rhizomes. Is that true?
I have not seen that when I've pulled it from this one garden, but it could be. I don't know. I'd have to look that one up.
All right. Leslie, thank you for the call. Appreciate that.
I'm going to get in there with my fingers and get going.
Get going. Yeah. All right. Got a few email questions. Matt in Orleans says, I use seaweed in the fall. He's talking about. It worked out very nicely. My garden beds were neat and tidy come spring. What are your thoughts on using seaweed as mulch now? Will the salt content do damage in the hot summer sun? Could I do a layer of seaweed, then some hemlock mulch on top? I'm thinking this could be a good natural option to landscape fabric, then mulch. Many thanks. He goes, P.S. Yes, the Fafard Purple complete soil I buy is getting so expensive.
Yes. I think seaweed, there is seaweed, the kelpie stuff, and then there's eelgrass, which generally can be used as a mulch. And you can put it down. The salt content is actually negligible. It's not in the material. There might be a minimal amount of it on the outside of the material, and that can be eliminated by, you know, just thoroughly washing it before you put it on your beds. So it's a great material to use. Check with your town to make sure it's okay to go collect it from the beach. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, go for it.
All right. Jane in Mashpee says, please, please, please do not plant Japanese holly. I have removed hundreds that have grown from seeds spread by birds, including in a conservation area. As with any non-native plants, they do not have herbivores that control them where they are native. Yes, I understand they are not yet listed on the mass invasive plant list. I had never heard that.
Well, I have a couple of Japanese. It depends on what Japanese holly she's talking about. There's the more upright one, like Blue Prince and Blue Princess, that has a darker green leaf than our Native mm-hmm. American holly. And then there's the Ilex crenata. There's also Inkberry holly. So I have several Japanese hollies in my yard, and I have no seedlings. So
me either.
It might be site-specific to her yard.
Yeah. All right, but thanks, Jane, for that. All right, Chris says, we planted a star magnolia this year in an area that gets full sun until about mid-May, at which time a huge maple above it fills in and makes the area nearly all shade for the summer. Is it doomed, or will having the sun early in the season be sufficient? It looks happy currently, green leaves all over. I can't think of another good spot for it on my property.
It will probably live quite happily there, but it may not bloom as much as he would wish.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. And we'll have more after break. You're listening to The Point. It's Gardening This Morning with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Jenny writes, peaches are getting bigger, but squirrels and chipmunks are already starting to get them. Do folks have any suggestions?
That would be my question. Anyone out there have any suggestions? I have not successfully grown peaches without squirrels and chipmunks and occasionally raccoons getting them.
Yeah.
So it is a tough.
Yeah.
You could try hanging like bags of soap shavings. Irish Spring is supposed to have repellent effect. You could hang little netted bags of Irish Spring soap shavings in your tree. I don't know that it will work.
All right. Well, we'll see if anybody else has any suggestions. If you do, give us a call, 866-999-4626. Or an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Dan was telling me he opened his door and found a little squirrel in one of his hanging baskets of flowers. He was surprised to see the squirrel there munching on some leaves.
Yeah, they're everywhere. I had last year a very large hanging basket of one of my tropical plants in a tree in the shade, and when I brought it in the fall, a mouse had made a nest in the soil. It's like, okay.
Got to check those things out.
Yes.
So what's happening in the vegetable garden? I started a new garden for my tomatoes, and they're just doing great right now.
My tomatoes look great there. As I look out the window, they're about 3.5 to 4 feet tall. Mm-hmm. I've got lots of nice green fruit on them. So I'm hoping in another, 3 to 4 weeks, I should be start picking, particularly the cherries. I'm already picking. I grow a variety of Lebanese zucchini called Magda. And it seems like almost every single flower sets a fruit, so I'm already
really?
A gray zucchini-like plant, fruit. So I'm already harvesting zucchini. Lettuce, obviously, is coming in hot and heavy at the moment. The cukes are looking good with lots of little babies on them, but I'm not harvesting yet. I'm done with the asparagus. I'm letting it all go to fern at the moment. Peas are almost ready, another week, and I should be picking peas. So it's coming in.
Yeah.
I love it.
My peas.
My favorite time of year.
Again, I don't know, rabbits, something ate my peas right down almost to the bottom. So no peas for me this year. But my lettuce looks great. And then I planted those cobra beans that a listener sent to us.
Oh yes, I was going to put them in a container, but one thing led to another, and I unfortunately haven't planted them yet.
I've planted my grandson and I made a nice little support thing for it, about 6 feet tall, and they're starting to come up. They're maybe about 4 inches tall at this point. So, and they got a little bit eaten, but not totally. So we'll see what happens there. But do we need to, with this weather, do we need to worry about any kind of diseases right now in the vegetable garden?
The big plant for disease are tomatoes. Mm-hmm. We always, sometime in the midsummer to late summer, start seeing leaf spot and other problems. Last year was a horrible year for tomato disease because it rained, every 3 days, and there was no way you could put a fungicide, organic or otherwise, on your tomatoes and have it be effective because within days it rained. This year, knock on wood, it may be a little bit different. So I am planning to start using something. I haven't decided what yet. I have to go, when next time in work, look at the area where they have that sort of material. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to use it preventatively. Most fungicides, whether they're organic or synthetic, are preventative in nature. They're not curative. So you need to put it on before the disease starts, and then you need to repeat it according to label directions, but generally it's probably going to say every 7 to 10 days. The other thing you need to do with your tomatoes is, if they're starting to have some good size on them now in terms of height, start taking off the lower set of leaves. Mm-hmm. And eventually you want about 12 to 18 inches of bare stem at the bottom of your tomato plant, because this allows good air circulation, and also many of the spores of these fungal disorders are present in soil, and during irrigation or rain, they get splashed up on the foliage. Mm-hmm. So if you're pruning off the lower leaves, it just increases the distance for the spores to be splashed. The other thing to do is, if you're growing indeterminate tomatoes, which are most of the varieties that you're growing are indeterminate, you need to take out the suckers. Try to keep your tomato plant to one or two stems. Otherwise, if you leave all the suckers, you could have a dozen stems inside your tomato cage, and it's very humid in there. You don't get good air circulation, and that's disease organisms just love that kind of condition.
When do you start using the fungicide to prevent things?
I'm going to start this weekend.
Okay. All right. Good to know. Let's see. We have Susie writes, a question about peonies that I've had for decades. I have 3 deep hot pink peonies that have never been as robust as the larger light pink peonies elsewhere on my property. Last year, I noticed some of the dark green leaves on these hot pink peonies began to get lighter, starting at the edges. The edges got rather reddish and wavy before curling towards the central vein. Some leaves also had some dark, larger spots. They are are in a freestanding bed with no other plants, so they get plenty of air circulation. I water no more than once a week and only in the morning, but it was humid last summer, so I suspect some sort of fungus. I cut back the affected stems and also thinned the plants, throwing away what I cut off. More leaves continue to be affected over the summer. Suspecting some sort of fungus at the end of the season, I cut the plants down to the ground and disposed of both the plant material and the mulch around each plant. Recently, I noticed the problem was starting again on some of the leaves, and half of the buds never developed but turned dark and dry. What to do?
There is a condition called bud blast that's just physiological, where the buds just begin to form and then turn brown and dry up and never do anything. There's also botrytis blight of peony that may be a problem there. It also sounds like there might be perhaps over the years with the mulch, the eyes have been buried a bit too deep. Peonies are fairly fussy about depth to their eyes. 2 inches deep is the most they want. So it might be that, you know, at the end of the season, perhaps dig them up and replant them so that they're at, like, maybe the eyes are 1.5 inches below the surface of the soil. That might help alleviate this problem.
Right. 866-999-4626 is our number for your garden questions or answers. If you want to help us with some tips, we'd love that too. 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Do you pinch back on your dahlias, the central stem? Do you pinch that?
Sometimes I do. I have some smaller dahlias that I potted up this year, and one I pinched, and it's nice and full, and the other, I've just been so busy, I never got around to it. And it's a beautiful plant, and it's starting to bloom, but it's loose and open and airy. It needed to be pinched, and I didn't do it. Yeah. So on the smaller dahlias, yes. On my big dinner plates, it depends on how much time I have.
Yeah. I've never pinched before. I did this year because I only have 6 now. I bought four more, but I had like 20 something last year. So I have this year. I'm curious to see the difference in how they will look.
Yeah.
So yeah, we'll see how that goes. All right. Hydrangeas. Everybody always wants to know about hydrangeas. Looking around, it seems like the hydrangeas are looking pretty good this year. And we've got Hydrangea Festival coming up.
It's coming up in early July. You can go online and see all the events that are surrounding the Hydrangea Fest. It goes on for a couple of weeks. There are gardens all across the Cape that are open to the public, $5 to visit the garden, and the proceeds from each garden. Each gardener selects a particular charity, and the proceeds from people visiting their garden go to support that charity. So you can get a complete listing of all the events. Chamber of Commerce has a great poster out and a flyer with the locations of these gardens and the dates that they're open. I go to several gardens every year. I really enjoy it. It's wonderful to see how other people use plants and get great ideas. And I think this year the hydrangeas are going to be fantastic. Every single hydrangea in my yard is loaded with buds. Some are beginning to flower, so I'm very excited about this season.
Yeah, and because we had such a mild winter, I think
have a freeze in April.
Yeah, yay! You know, I love visiting the gardens as well. This was a number of years ago. Do you remember there was one year, and it was the Master Gardeners. It was across the Cape, and maybe it was just that one year because all the master gardeners were like, wait, we don't get to see everybody's garden because we have to be in our own. But I don't remember whose garden this was, but he had these fabulous climbing hydrangeas that went up into the trees. And I thought, wow, that just blew me away. So I have 2 trees in my yard that have done, and it's been many years now, but they just look fantastic with the climbing hydrangea.
I love the climbing hydrangea, and they are in bloom right now across the Cape. Yeah. They look really beautiful. I had one, and of course I planted it in the wrong location, as I'm inclined to do because I get so enthusiastic, and I had it was going up my chimney and was just fantastic, and it was just not doing my chimney any favor, so I had to cut it down, and I haven't replanted one. But I do have the false hydrangea vine. It's a schizophragma, and it's growing up a pine tree in the backyard. It likes a shaded location, and it's blooming beautifully right now. Unfortunately, I can only see it from my bedroom window on the second floor. So I go upstairs and say, oh, look, there it is, and it's in full bloom.
Another thing I'm sorry I ever planted was wisteria.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful plant, but it is extremely vigorous.
Yeah.
In some cases, it's invasive. I've seen it growing in the dunes along the Bayside beaches in Dennis, where it has no business being. So it's a problem. I do not recommend wisteria, except for the Native American wisteria, Wisteria frutescens. That one is less vigorous and tends to stay much more contained.
Yeah.
So that would be the appropriate one to plant.
Right. I had a honeysuckle, but I had a trellis against the house that the honeysuckle on it. So I have moved the trellis, and I, honest to God, when digging, that thing has been there probably for 10 years. So it was huge. Digging that thing up and all of the roots that I broke to get it out, I thought for sure this thing was a goner. But it evidently you can't kill it because it...
They are tough plants.
I was shocked to see the green come up, and it is climbing the trellis in its new home.
Yes, and it will be very happy. I have a beautiful yellow flowering honeysuckle, sport of one of the native honeysuckles, and it was going up a big trellis on my deck, and I had to have my deck rebuilt last year, and it got cut down. I cut it and left a whole bunch of stems, and the folks who constructed the deck just cut it right to the ground. And it's coming back.
Yeah, amazing.
And so I'm thrilled about that.
Yeah, mine is the orange, the bright orange and yellow. It's just beautiful.
Major Wheeler probably is the one you have. That's a common one.
Yeah.
And great for the hummingbirds. If
you'd
like something that blooms from now until sporadically through September, Major Wheeler honeysuckle is perfect.
Yeah. Meg writes, what is the best variety of hydrangea to plant near the coast?
Well, that's, I would say hydrangea paniculata, not the blue hydrangea. The white cone-shaped flowered hydrangea is more tolerant of wind and full sun and possibly salt. The blue hydrangea you can plant along the coast, but in a more sheltered location where it's not getting direct salt spray from the ocean wind. So maybe on the side of the house away from the water. But any hydrangea seems to do extremely well here on the Cape.
Yeah. I would say my favorite panicula, Limelight, my Limelight.
They're lovely.
They're just gorgeous, yeah. Meg in Mattapoisett says, our coastal landscape is being destroyed by rabbits. Any secret tricks to deter them?
Unfortunately, no. This is, where are the coyotes when you need them? The rabbit population is just out of bounds. I'm familiar with it here on the Cape because I have literally hundreds of bunnies in my yard every year, and I have not been successful in deterring them.
Yeah.
I'm hoping this year my planting of clover is going to make them happy.
Yeah. So does scram or something like that work at all?
It does. You can use that around, protect individual plants. The one that works the best for ornamentals, not for edibles, is the liquid plant skid. It's made of pig's blood. It doesn't smell very good, but it does deter all sorts of animals, including rabbits. I use rabbit scram on the outside of my vegetable beds before I started using fencing. But to get rid of them in a large area, there's really no way you can do that.
Yeah, you could chase them, Meg, like I do. I think they see me and go, here comes Mrs. McGregor, run, run for it. Except the little one, the little bunny doesn't, just looks up at me and like, I'm so cute, you're not going to chase me, right?
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Hostas are also doing really well this year, even though they got a little bit of damage from the rabbits early. The hostas all have seemed to bounce back.
My hostas have come back. Next year, I'm going to be a little proactive. I bought these, like, wire little trash can thingies. You can get them at Dollar Store. You can get them on Amazon. And when I saw a hosta that was being eaten this year, I went out and turned one of these upside down over the hosta, also over some lilies, and lo and behold, my hostas are fine, so are the lilies.
Jenny says a neighbor told her that we should put out dishes of water to help stop rabbits from chewing plants. It can be from thirst. Not in my yard. I've got lots of water. I've got the bird baths. I've got the fountain that's low to the ground.
I have a couple of just little like stone.
Yeah.
Dished out rocks
that sit
on the ground, and they're full of water for like chipmunks and things like that.
Yeah, all right.
And I still have rabbit problems.
All right, third Tuesday of the month, we have Roberta here to answer all our gardening questions. As always, thank you so much, Roberta. Appreciate
it. My pleasure.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.